This weekend's message is just one component of our consume journey, which is a little different from a regular Crossroads weekend series. During a journey, people in our community do some individual reflection through the week and meet with a small group to extend that learning. We dive a little deeper into the topic, meet new people, and have a lot of fun along the way. So if you're listening at home or in a car, consider downloading the Consume Journey Guide to work along with us during the week. It's available as a free PDF download at crossroads.net/consumed. And we challenge you to get into a small group for at least the duration of the Consume Journey to share your experiences and discuss the things you're learning. You can find a group and access other small group resources at crossroads.net.
Awesome. Bittersweet Symphony. You're a slave to money and then you die. This is what we're talking about in this journey. We do every year an all-church journey. If you're first time today, you've come in the most important time every year for our church. We pick a topic and we say, this topic we're going to totally hone in on and grow in spiritually. Our whole church together, we're going to make this happen. And let me tell you a little bit about my journey with this over the last, call it 8 months or so. You know, we're seeing a bunch of images that are up here right now. You're going to see over the next hour, 6,000 images right here. And that will equal the number of advertisements you're going to get over the next 2 days telling you you don't have enough. And if you get this, then everything will be just fine. We live in a culture that constantly sends us images telling us to consume and to have and aspire for more. One of the images, though, that I just got yesterday was pretty cool. The partnership that we have with International Justice Mission, where we are working in India to bring children out of child sex slavery. We had a raid a couple days ago and rescued 31 girls out of child sex slavery. Now, on the other hand of it, as more information has come in, we're finding that this is very rarely a clean-cut thing. We found out that 15 of the girls were not minors, so they can't prosecute, and they're having a lot of other issues with trying to bring to closure the others. These are messy, messy things, but it's part of what we're here as a church for. And when I went away on my summer study break this last year, I was thinking about stuff like this, because we knew coming up, we wanted to do stuff this next year, over the next couple of years, like have a halfway house for people who are rescued from sex slavery, where they can be safe and decompress, and then be able to fund businesses, start businesses, so they actually can make money in ways other than turning tricks. I went into my last summer study break knowing that we needed to really take our partnership with South Africa and the AIDS hospice and operating costs and the infrastructure to a whole new place, not just for our calling there, but because we're seeing churches here in the States that are learning from us, wanting to have partnerships over there in Africa, and could be a model that's sweeping the globe, knowing that we've got stuff like CityLink with generational poverty here in our own city that we feel a huge burden and responsibility for, and knowing that though we're probably not going to be putting any more buildings on our site here in Oakley, that we want other sites popping up all over the city so people can hear about Jesus in a way in which they understand, and we can galvanize more people for the revolution of the kingdom of God like we've been doing. And so I really felt, in connection with leaders, we really felt like the thing that was going to make all this happen was another campaign. We've done two three-year campaigns where people give above and beyond what they normally give. And the first one we did, we had people give seven times, we joyfully gave seven times our normal giving over 3 years. And then the second one, we had people, we gave five times our normal giving over 3 years. So coming into this, we're thinking, hey, you know, if our operating budget right now is $9 million, which it is, you know, tens of millions of dollars will be able to be galvanized against these kinds of efforts. And I went into my study break saying, okay, let's just get ready. This is going to be a defining moment for our church and for the world, because we're trying to really impact the world. And before I left, other folks started putting seeds in my mind that ended up being why we're here today of, you know, campaigns are good. And we'll do another campaign sometime, I'm sure. There's nothing wrong with them. But the problem with the campaign is it does give you another burden for 3 years of something you need to meet that you already joyfully wanted to meet, but it's yet another burden on top of our culture where we tend to be already so burdened financially. We're burdened with debt. We're burdened with feeling like we need more savings. We're burdened with feeling like we have to have this and that. There's a bondage that comes. And what would happen if we were able to get all of us out of bondage into freedom to where we could be lifelong generous givers? Just as a normal practice, be generous givers because we are totally freed up. 180,000 people in America, 180,000 people between 18 and 25 go bankrupt every year. There, in this year in America, there will be more people graduate, there will be more people declare personal bankruptcy than graduate from college in America this year. Americans spend, on average, I've seen two studies, anywhere from $1.12 to $1.21 on every dollar we own, or that we earn. Every dollar we earn, we spend $1.12 to $1.21. And if it's not that, if it's not us actually overspending, for some of us it's oversaving. For some of us it's overfixating on our financial portfolio. It's overfixating on the dreams and the aspirations that are out there that are crushing on us. And we can't even enjoy the freedom we have right now, relatively speaking, because we think we have to get to a whole new level financially to be in a new place. God, I'm asking that today you would help us to see things we hadn't seen before. You'd help us, most importantly, to see you and start this journey in a way that's healthy, in a way that gets us to a great finish line. Just use my words and everything that happens today, we pray. Amen. What I want for you is not another obligation. I want freedom. That's what I want. I want freedom for you. And I know right now there's two people in here. There's those of us who watch that, and we weren't laughing very much because that's all too painful of a reminder of our current reality. And already you're starting to feel a little shame, and that's not what today or this entire journey is about. And there's others of us, maybe you're sitting there going, yeah, I don't like that. I got my stuff together. Aren't I good? And you might think that, you know, you're just right where you need to be and you're not making bad mistakes, but yet you fixate to see if your net earnings, your net wealth is going up. You fixate over hoping you're going to get the next job. You fixate over your a new American dream. You keep trying to up the ante on. In one way or another, all of us can be in bondage. But here's three things I want to say today. The first big one is this. You and I both, we are created to consume and to be consumed. This is not about let's not consume. You and I are created to consume and we are created to be consumed. Question is by what, by whom, how much, how does that all fit in? You think about this as us as people. God has created us to need food. He's created us to have this sense of dependence, of needing to eat. And he's given us taste buds to enjoy different kinds of foods, different textures of foods. Unless you live in the tropics, you're created to need clothes to keep you warm. You're created to consume. There's also something very fascinating about us that I've been learning by reading The Omnivore's Dilemma. Anybody read or reading The Omnivore's Dilemma? It's a fascinating book. It's called The Omnivore's Dilemma because you and I are the only creating beings that are omnivores. We're not just carnivores. We're not just plantivores. What's the opposite of carnivore? What is it? Herbivores. Okay. Other beings, life is very simple. Hey, I see a plant, I eat it. I see a thing, I kill it and eat it. Koala bears, they know they have this one leaf that they just kind of eat this. You and I, though, we can eat anything. We can eat this, we can eat that, we can kill this, we can have that. We can ingest it all. And so the dilemma is, what will I consume today? Because I have so many options. We're the only created being that actually can eat corn. Because we're the only ones that actually do stuff like make a fire, make water, put the corn in it, soften it, ingest it. We make concoctions that nobody else can make. We take different ingredients, put them together in a stew and say, ooh, this is so good, I will consume this. I love this. We're the only ones that can invent and think of, you know, pita pepperoni pockets put in microwaves. The way God intended. God bless America. God bless America. We think of these things, and this comes out of our creativity and our capacity to consume that God loves and has created us for. The question is, what ultimately do we want to consume? Do we want to consume God or do we want to consume things? And the more things that we do consume, the more likely that we're fueling something that's unhealthy, something that's a substitute for God. In the book of Ecclesiastes chapter 5, it says this. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owner except to feast his or her eyes on them? As goods increase, we keep getting more and wanting more and having more, and it just kind of creates this voracious appetite with very little satisfaction. I mean, how many of us, if you would have told us 5 years ago that we'd be making what we make today, we probably all would have said, oh man, if I ever make that kind of money, I'll never need another dollar ever. And then we consume that lifestyle, consume that paycheck. Oh, man, I need a new raise. I mean, every time, it's for this it's been for my life. I never thought if I would be making X, I would ever need anything else. Yet every pay raise gets consumed. And I still am in that situation. And how does it get consumed? It gets consumed because of the images that I am being fed that I need to have and consume more. Even if I'm on a plane going over to South Africa, I can't get away with it. I can't get away from Sky Mall magazine. You know, you're on the plane trying to enjoy your life and they're trying to convince you to consume. You ever take a look at some of the stuff inside of this? It's pretty humorous, really. Here's one. On the road to your desk, keep your beverage hot. Just what I need, a cup that plugs into my computer. My goodness. Will our creativity never cease? It's not good enough to have a thermal mug. I need one that actually plugs into my computer. Man, yeah, that'll make me happy. How about this one? You know, I'm a little overweight. Let's buy this contraption. Yeah, that'll get used. That'll get used. How many of us, we buy stuff thinking if I just buy it, I'll use it? No. No, here's an idea. How about push-ups? But no, we want to go buy. Here's one. You know, Lord of the Rings. Let me say, guys, if you buy this, you are a dork. You are a dork. You are a loser. If you're caught wearing my precious, let me say something. You will never feel a real woman. That will not happen to you, you know? You got this.
Hi. I have a Lord of the Rings ring on. Aren't I attractive?
Gondor, or whatever the heck his name is, you know? But yet we buy these things and thinking that if I have these things, then I'll be satisfied, I'll consume, and oh, strange. And God is saying, hey, you can buy things. God says, I'm for you buying stuff and for you having nice stuff. We'll talk about that in a moment. But really, the foundation of it is, I want you to have me. I want you to consume me, and I want to consume you. Book of Psalms, chapter 119, it says this. My soul is consumed with longing for your laws at all times. My soul is consumed. God, I just want your ways. I want your ways and how you do things. I want to be consumed with it at all times. I just want to live in the freedom of knowing you're giving me inner satisfaction beyond what any catalog can give me. Now, the nation of Israel underwent a journey that's going to be similar to the journey that we're going on and similar to the journey that all of us live as people in this world. They were in bondage to the nation of Egypt. And when they left Egypt, Charlton Heston, Moses, took them on a journey to freedom. And they get to freedom. And Moses has to go up on a mountain, goes up on a mountain to talk with God, where he gets the law, where he gets God's instructions, where he writes it down. And while Moses is up on this mountain, the people start to get a little antsy. Because Moses is sort of their comfort blanket. He's their satisfaction. Everything's okay. That's how some of us treat things. Our things are our comfort blanket. They're our satisfaction. You know, we're bored. What do? Go shopping. We're depressed. What do? Go shopping. We feel like there's something missing. What do? Go shopping. You know, it's kind of our way to soothe ourselves. And Moses is away, and now they're getting a little skittish and antsy, wondering where God is. And so they get this bright idea of creating another God from all of their possessions. And here's what it says in the book of Exodus chapter 32. So all the people took off their earrings and brought them to Aaron, who's Moses' understudy. He took what they handed him, made it into an idol cast in the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. Then they said, "These are your gods, Israel, who brought you up out of Egypt." They're now saying, this is God. This is the real God. This calf, this golden calf that you've actually created for yourself out of your own consumptions. You're now going to consume this false God who really is not the God that brought you to freedom, but it'll have to do right now. This is amazing how you think this sounds so strange. Why would you do that? Why would you look to an object for satisfaction? But we do this all the time. We think that if I don't have this, then I can't be satisfied. If I'm not attaining that, then I can't be satisfied. And it ends up fueling something in us that's very strange. See, one of the things that money does do is money does provide us a level of freedom. And any of us who are cash poor right now, you know what I'm talking about. When your car breaks down, you are in bondage because you take that into the mechanic and you are so concerned that it might be something over $100 because you've only got $100 left on your credit card. I remember those days. I remember those days. It's incredibly freeing right now. Though I don't have a massive amount of liquid assets. I can now take my car in and I know I'll be able to cover it because there's freedom from having some liquidity. There's freedom from having some money. But the dangerous thing is the more we have, the more we think that we need, and the more it actually becomes a golden calf for us. And then it actually holds us in bondage. We actually treating our savings accounts or treating our credit capacity as God. Question is, what does God feel about nice things? I started thinking about this. I'm going, wait a minute. These Israelites, they were slaves. They were in bondage. Slaves aren't known for having nice things. That's the point of putting somebody in slavery is so that they don't have anything and they're dependent upon. Where does all their nice stuff come from? Where does all their gold come from? Well, let's look where it comes from. God says to them, actually, before they leave the nation of Egypt, before they leave slavery, he says this. I will make the Egyptians favorably disposed toward this people so that when you leave, you will not go empty-handed. Every woman is to ask her neighbor and any woman living in her house for articles of silver and gold and for clothing, which you will put under on your sons and daughters. And so you will plunder the Egyptians. God actually says to them, I want you to have nice things. In fact, so much so, I want you to take all the wealth out of Egypt. I want you to get nice earrings, nice bracelets, nice Rolex watches, you know, nice Gucci bags, and all whatever they have that's nice, I'm going to give them to you. I want you to have them. We are not in this journey saying you shouldn't have stuff. We're not in this journey trying to make anybody feel guilty about what they have. We're not saying you have to use both sides of the toilet paper. We're not saying that in this journey. You can obviously have nice things because they had nice things and God gave them nice things. The question is whether or not nice things have you. You can have money. The question is, does money have you? You know, you can use stuff, but is stuff using you? That's the question. So last Wednesday I got with some people that really helped make Crossroads happen and talked about things that we want to do to go to the next level in South Africa and locally. And I just, as we talked about all these different things, the person was just really fired up and sent me an email and said, hey, my wife and I just are so excited about this. We want to give more to Crossroads. And we just bought these $46 candles, this candle set. We're going to return that and give all the money to Crossroads. And when I got the email, I kind of had two things that went through my mind. The first was, man, that's pretty cool. I wish that more of us thought that way. And then the second thing I thought was, man, I hope this person or no one else thinks that there's anything wrong with having $46 candles. This is not about saying, hey, let's not have anything nice. It's just saying, let's not have anything nice have us. Let's be consumed by God, not consumed with the ongoing consumption of more and more and more. In Exodus 32:5, God sees these people and he gets really upset. He calls them stiff-necked people. He and Moses are hanging out up in the mountain. He says, you better go down and hang out with these stiff-necked people and get them right because something's happened is awful. I've done all these things for these folks. I've loved on all these people. And now in a moment, they've abandoned me and they're consuming another god. They're giving themselves over to stuff instead of giving themselves over to me. Go down to the stiff-necked people, straighten them out. So here's what happens. When Aaron saw this, he built an altar in front of the calf and announced, tomorrow there will be a festival to the Lord. So Aaron is actually now calling the calf God. This is the Lord, the one who brought us out of bondage. Crazy what he's thinking. Utterly, completely crazy. See, unfettered consumption will bring bondage. Unfettered consumption, when you don't at least think through whether or not my stuff has me, and you just go with the flow, whatever you have, it'll bring bondage. Aaron and the Israelites are just thinking, well, if we have it, then I guess it's good, and I guess we have it, then God gave it to them. Well, let's just make this God. It's a very slippery slope to get there. And so when God sees that his people are this way, Moses comes down, and here's what Moses does. And he took the calf that they had made and burned it in the fire. Then he grounded it to powder, scattered it on the water, and made the Israelites drink it. He takes it, grounds it down, fires it. You know, anything that's impure gets burned up in the fire. And then when only the purity is left, he's got to ground it up and put it in water, make them drink it. It was interesting that someone told me yesterday that one of the great treatments for arthritis is drinking gold dust. I didn't know this. I think it's interesting that God actually calls them stiff-necked people when he makes them drink gold dust. They have spiritual arthritis. They're stiff. Here's the other thing that's interesting about this is that anything that you and I consume, no matter how good or bad it is, everything that we consume will either end up in the landfill or in the sewer line. The thing that they're worshiping, in 16 hours, they pee and poo in 16 hours. I mean, the irony of that. And he makes them do, they're thinking this through over the next 16 hours and they go do their business. They're thinking of the futility of the thing that they've been worshiping. Have you ever noticed the things that you just thought that you had to have that then just got upgraded a year later or end up being put in a garage sale and being marked down to 25 cents 6 years later? It just gets ground to dust or it gets flushed down the toilet. Now, I had a great time last week. Did you have a good time last week? The Super Bowl thing. Yeah, Super Bowl thing. Really, really fun. Really, really fun. I got one negative comment from last weekend. And it was, which is amazing. It was the only negative comment I had. But and I could sort of understand it, but it also bothered me a little bit. Somebody was really concerned that when they were walking in, they saw a bunch of you wild and crazy tailgaters out there. Tailgating with everything from water to Coke to Pepsi, Diet Pepsi, and also beers and Bloody Marys happening out there in our parking lot. And this person was really upset and offended and like concerned, what are we doing for people who are in addiction? This is awful. What's your church going to do next? Offer weed and porn? That's the kind of thing that does. Very interesting. So, good question. Great question. We've worked about around those kind of things with our recovery ministry. Great question. But here's the thing. I too am an addict. I am an addict. Hi, my name is Brian. There's all the AA people, you know, right there. They know, yeah, is that? Hi, my name is Brian, and I'm an addict. I'm addicted to stuff. I'm addicted to stuff. And I've never had anybody criticize Crossroads for fueling the addiction to stuff. When that was something that I was tempted with last week when I walked in that atrium, I saw this brand new Toyota truck sitting out there in that atrium. Oh my word, hello. Let me tell you what happened to me last week. I come in there and I wanted a mini Toyota truck for a long time. It'd be like my dream vehicle, right? And I'm going, oh, brand new ones. I'm going up and I'm looking at the stickers on them. I'm looking at the tow package on this one. I'm coming over, look at the color combination. Ooh, extended cab on this one. No cab. Look at the tires. I'm going around. It's like a feast for my eyes. And then I find out that those trucks came from Dave Stansbury, who I know works with Toyota. Maybe get a good discount on one of them. I'm fixating, analing on all of the details of a Toggle people. And then I come around, as I make the loop, I come to this one truck that's actually got a flat screen television in the back. Oh, now that's something I've been working on for a while, figuring out when I can have the cash to buy a flat screen TV, because I don't like the glare on my television, I don't like this, but I just know, with all the things I would need to do financially, that's not been the right thing for me to do up to this point, but man, I would love to get me a new flat screen television. Let me tell you something. You put a flat screen television in a Toyota pickup truck, you may as well out there have a stripper on a pole for me. You know, you put a stripper on a pole, it's gonna tempt me to do things that I really shouldn't do. You put a flat screen television inside of a truck? Oh man, see, I am an addict. I cannot get over this stuff. It's a lifelong process for me. And there's two things. There's a lot of things that all addictions have in common. I'm going to talk about two today. Well, first thing that addiction does is it drives us to secrecy. It drives us to isolation. That's why I'm going to talk about my addiction right now. I want to just bring it out and talk about it. It causes us to be secret. It causes us to be, you know, to ourselves and not talk about it. When's the last time you had a healthy conversation about how much you earn with somebody else? When's the last time you even share with somebody your financial dreams? When's the last time have you ever told anybody how much debt that you have? Does anybody know anything about you financially other than the creditors who called? My answer is no. No, I know you've never told somebody. I know you've never shared. I know you have not, because we're addicts. We keep it secret. Everything else we'll talk about. Sure, we'll talk about our sex life, but this, whoo! Oh, no, this is me. This is my pride. That's what addicts do. Things are kept in isolation. Second thing that happens with addicts And as I tell my story here, you'll see this happens over and over again. Addicts live in two extremes. They live with the high and they live with the humiliation. No matter what your addiction is, heroin, alcohol, sex, workaholism, there's two extremes. There's the high of when you're getting your fix and you just feel like you're $1 million, you're on top of everything. And then there's the humiliation when you have to deal with the consequences of getting your high and you just feel lower than a footprint. Addicts can't live in the middle. It's very hard to figure out in the middle. And so for me as an addict, I will bounce back and forth between two extremes. It's, you know, having a nice thing or buying a nice thing and then like giving everything away and wanting to be a monk. Honestly, and I deal with a lot of feelings around guilt. Guilt in stuff I have is a very regular thing that comes with me. Some of my earliest memories about money when I was a kid, and seemed like my friends always had the cool toy and I never did. And my only hope to get a toy was my birthday or Christmas. And at Christmas, that didn't even help me out all that much because my parents would oftentimes try to kill two birds with one stone. They would try to, hygiene projects. They would buy hygiene products for me and put them in my stocking stuffer. Just they'd kind of help their budget out and help me out at the same time. So I'd get my Christmas stocking and a deodorant. Great. Dental floss. Just what I always wanted. Wonderful. So I would, my parents were awesome and took care of me and, you know, taking care of themselves financially. That's awesome. I wish I had more of their financial sense. But what this did for me, when other kids had the STPs or the Evel Knievel racers or the whatever, all these things, and I tended to not have them or have to wait a long, long time, I just had this thing of I'm getting deprived. I want. And so when I was 18 years old and I had the ability to get my first credit card, hello, I see it. I want it. I have it. Thank you very much. End of story. Plastic power I have. And a lot of that stuff I simply had was stuff that got flushed down the toilet when I went to Pizza Hut instead of doing ramen noodles. And I lived then with 21% interest for years and years and years and years. And then it wasn't just the credit card. That was back when payment books were really, really big. So I bought a VCR and I had a payment book. Bought a television, had a payment book. I mean, I just had all this stuff and a bunch of debt to go with it. And then Libby and I met and we got married and she had payment books. She had payment books of places that aren't even in business any longer. Horns, Kaufman's, all this stuff. And so we actually did debt consolidation. That happened just when we got married. We consolidated our debt into one marriage. I had all my debt. She had all my debt. We consolidated debt. And I can remember the drawer on our desk just filled with books and statements. I hated going to the mailbox. It was painful for me. And while this was happening, another thing that we were wrestling with and had always endeavored to do was tithe, give an absolute minimum of 10% back to God into things that were causing life change. Early in my life, my parents tried to seed me with this, and they would take a little giving envelope that I would take it to church. My mom played the organ, my dad sang in the choir, and I hated going to church. Hated it. It just would really bother me. To this day, it warms my heart when kids like coming to church. That's the way it should be. But I hated going to church. I would fake like I was sleeping. I would fake like I was sick. Anything to get out of going. Of course, it never worked. But when I had to get up and get going, I'd get this little envelope, and I could tell it had a little indentation on the corner of it. It had a little dime in it. So that was my offering. Just get, here's my dime, God. I'd get my little dime in there, and you know. And then when I was 14, the church got a raise. My dad put another nickel in there. So it was like 15 cents. And I, you know, I was just doing that whole deal. And then when I learned that, man, this 10% thing is a whole new level, we wrestled with that. And now what do? We've always been wanting to, we always had done that, but now we got so much debt that's now together. It was some rough stuff. We had to actually go and move in with my in-laws. First year of our marriage. Leave our apartment so we could lower our overhead. It was $420 a month. Go in with my in-laws. Pay down debt. All this stuff. Let me tell you something. When you're a virile young dude, the last thing you want is to be having sex on your in-laws' second floor. That's just not your idea of success. You know what I'm saying? It was humiliating and it was freeing. It was one of the best things that we ever did financially. It set us up to start to gain traction. Now, the other thing that's happening through this is something I've been wrestling with right now, and that is salary stuff. My salary has always been a difficult issue for me working with churches. I've always felt as a church, whether it was right or wrong, I felt a certain level of abuse over the amount of money I was making, or when I actually have my salary reduced. I remember when we had our first child on the way, Lena, we were just barely making any money anyway, and I'd submitted a budget for the ministry that I oversaw, and I went in the next day because I knew they had a big board meeting for the budget, and I was hoping that my budget got approved. And when I went in, they said, well, no, your budget didn't get approved, and actually we decided that we have to cut your salary in half. I was like, cut my salary? I didn't even know that was even a possibility. I mean, I would have liked to have known that that was a possibility. Well, we didn't know either. It just kind of was, we looked at the numbers, we had to do some things. So we'll let you raise money, though. You can raise your own support if you'd like. Which actually was a good thing, because I raised much more than I got cut. So that actually worked out for me. But I'll tell you what, those kind of things make me be very skeptical and feel like somebody's always out to get me and hurt me financially in churches. And I brought that baggage to Cincinnati 12 years ago. And every salary discussion we've had as Crossroads has always been wonderful, always been generous, always been gracious. I've had baggage from my addiction that causes me to read things in that aren't there. I've had baggage from my hurts and pains that causes me to read things in that isn't there. And it's so strange, you know, that every time I start making a certain amount of money, I think I'll never need anything else again, and then it gets consumed. And all of a sudden, you're just not feeling like you're fulfilled. So right now, my next, I haven't had a pay raise for 5 years. My last pay raise was 5 years ago, in large part because the last one I got was so generous and wasn't really necessary. Also, what's happened is I've known that the board, which, by the way, people think I write checks myself. I can't write checks to myself. There's a board that I submit to, and I'm under their authority, and I have no relatives on that board either. Okay, so volunteers set my salary and figure that stuff out. So I've known for the last year, they've told me that they're doing a review of what my compensation should be over a variety of different factors and studies. And they've been looking at this thing for, I didn't know it was going to be a year, but they've been very thorough on it. And while this is happening, this is playing into my addiction, my sense of someone's trying to take advantage of, my sense that something isn't right. And I've just been bothered. It's been very, very, very bothering to me. And we had an incredible conversation just, you know, this last week, which was great because all of a sudden secrecy comes out. No one's ever trying to be secret, but we just talk about it. It's like, ooh, man, awesome, phenomenal. Ooh, it's been great. But let me tell you the low point. Let me tell you the low point. The low point for me was a few weeks ago when I'm just churned up. I am just churning up over this. Really deeply bothered. Bothered to the point of when I'm talking with God and when I'm praying, it's the first thing I'm talking and praying about and trying to process through. Bothered to the point of waking up in the night with this on my mind. Bothered to the point of, you know, just very, very, and by the way, you know, I know you're all going, hey, well, how much is it? I'm not going to tell you how much it is, okay? Because if you make less than me, you think I make too much. You make more than me, you think I'm getting abused. So that's what I love to tell you. Friends of mine know, but no, I'm not going to tell you. So I have some things in my life I can keep private, can I? Yes, okay. So anyway, so a couple weeks ago, I'm just like, I go to this meeting here in Cincinnati with a bunch of other people, and it's a prayer meeting. And this person, this prayer meeting, this woman says, God, we're disturbed. We're disturbed by people in our city who are hungry today. God, we're disturbed about children in our city that don't have a mom and a dad. God, we're disturbed. There's orphans. There are orphans in our city, and there's a foster care system that is hurting. There's genuine orphans. We're disturbed about that in our city. And I sat there and I thought, I'm not disturbed. I'm not disturbed about that at all. I'm disturbed about my potential salary increase. That's what I'm disturbed about. And I'm disturbed that I'm not disturbed. I'm disturbed that I've put more time thinking and obsessing over what's going to happen with how much more money I get and why I'm not getting more money more quickly than these things. And I have no worries about what's in my stomach. I have no worries of family like that. And I just broke down. It was a proper humiliation in that meeting. I was humiliated as I should have been. It was like God was convicting me. I was like, God, what am I? I just This is the power that money and stuff has over me, has over stuff. And here's the thing. There is no place where I can go for help except for a place like this. No place. America is not going to help me with this addiction. America does not want me to break this addiction. I got to keep America rolling. That's what I got to do, right? Terrorist comes, what's the best thing I can do? Spend money. I get a tax refund or some checks in me coming. What's everyone saying? The thing that I have to do, I have to spend it. America is not going to, if I have any addiction, a heroin addiction, a sex addiction, I can find Christians, Hindus, atheists to help me. The world will help me with any addiction I have except when it comes to materialism. Nobody is going to help me with this. I'm going to continue to be made feel like I'm inferior or that I need more and I need to spend more. No one is going to help me with this except God. He's the only one who will help. Except being a place like this for folks like you who say, man, we get this. We want to come against this. This is totally counter to the world system that says keep buying. If you can buy it, buy it. If you can have it, have it. If you can attain it, attain it. If you can save it, save it. Don't give it. If you can, this is part of our culture. It's the way our country, it's the way the world actually works. And it doesn't work for us spiritually. It does not work. It grinds us down. See, freedom is when we are consuming and being consumed by God. That's true freedom. Freedom comes when we're consuming God and being consumed by God. That's freedom. Oh, one other thing. Got to tell you this. I should have told this. Another thing, example about the extremes, with the humiliation or the high and the humiliation is, A key process for that for me was a couple years ago, several years ago, when we went through our most recent campaign, the Crazy Campaign. We all made commitments, what we felt like God wanted us to give above and beyond what we regularly give. And they were joyful commitments, but they were also very hard commitments. One of the things that was part of my our family's commitment was we took out a loan for a new house. We had a ridiculously low rate of 5.25% over 30 years. And we were renting from time to time motorcycles to ride. And we said, hey, you know, this has been a great release and outlet for us. It makes a lot of sense to just buy a motorcycle and pay for it over 30 years at 5.25% interest. And we consult with people, talk with people, wise, and say, yeah, that's a great idea. So it took $15,000 out. It's about what a used Harley is, a good used Harley. Took $15,000 off, and we'll pay for it over 30 years. And the problem was we didn't spend it fast enough. You know, I spent too much time researching it because then the Crazy Campaign came along. We sensed God saying, yeah, that $15,000, I want that. I want that. I was like, okay. Well, that was the start of the things that, other things that we did. We just cashed everything out we had. And I felt good. Part of why I feel good when I cash everything out and I give, part of it is because when I do that, I think that God wants us to do that. And there is a spiritual power that comes in there. But I also have this monk guilt thing where when I don't have anything, this kind of the humiliation of addiction, I feel like, okay, I'm all right. I don't have anything. That's the way it should be because God doesn't like me. It's crazy. It's crazy. I think that I don't deserve anything, but that's kind of going there. So then about a year and a half later, or so 2 years, something like that, I got a call from a Harley Davidson dealer and they say, hey, Mr. Tone, we need you to come in for a fitting. So what do you mean for a fitting? I said, well, you just got to come in. So a few days later, I went in and apparently somebody had anonymously bought me a brand new motorcycle. And to this day, I have no idea who it is, but they needed to fit me, make sure I sat on it right. Now, you would think this is incredible high, like, woo, free Harley, yeah. No, it wasn't at all, really. It was very difficult for me. I talked to the board about should I accept it, interact with other folks. I felt guilty for a year riding the thing and trying to justify it because as an addict, it's hard for me to live in the middle ground. We're not saying here, have nothing, and we're not saying have everything. What is the right car to drive? What is the right amount to have in savings? What is the right amount of clothes to buy? What is the, there's no right and wrong answer to that. There's a tension that God wants us to live in the middle area there where he likes us having nice things and nice things can't have us. And when we live in that tension and we wrestle this stuff through with God, there is a sense of freedom that comes that wouldn't come any other way. Freedom comes when we consume God. And God consumes us. It's Psalm 119. When we say to God, God, I want to consume you. My soul is consumed with you. I think about you. I want you. I want you in my life. I want you in my heart. I want you to govern every decision I make. And I know I'm not going to do them all right, but I just want you to know, God, I want to be consumed with you. Now, when you came in, you got a photo. Let me tell you, we're going to do these photos. Pull out your photos. If you didn't get one, you can get one afterwards and go in the atrium. This is the coolest thing that I'm so excited about. Let me tell you right now what's happening. You have received a lot of messages to discredit everything I've said over the last half hour. Let me just say that. I know that you've thought, yeah, but I bet you make a lot of jack. I know you've thought, yeah, but you're not tough. I know you thought, yeah, but you're, yeah, but the crossroads just won't. Yeah, I tell you, you've had a demon on your shoulder, like telling you stuff, making you think stuff the entire time. How do I know that? Because if I was you, I'd be feeling the same thing. And I believe that this area we're talking about is the most critical area for your spiritual formation. I think this is the one area that God is most excited to bless you in. This is the one area. And this is the one area you're not going to get any help from in anywhere else other than a place like this. And I believe that there's a spirit realm. And I believe the spirit realm is coming after you and trying to make you not listen to everything, or trying to make you feel shame right now, trying to make you feel guilt, trying to make you feel like you're a loser, trying to make you, you have more stuff to wrestle with here than probably maybe ever sitting through this, because we're getting to the core of many of our identity, the core of much of our addictive behavior, and there needs to be a spiritual breaking. I have a picture of a guy named Tawil that's on my refrigerator. Actually, it used to be on my refrigerator. The last refrigerator I had would take magnets. I bought a refrigerator and I can't stick anything to it. Stupid. That engineer ought to be shot. Who designs a refrigerator that can't take a magnet? That's crazy. Especially when I thought it was stainless steel. I guess it's just silver plastic. Anyway. So I would have Twill's picture on our refrigerator. You know, we still help Twill every month with food, education, basic stuff, because we're a financial have and he's a financial have not. We have some financial prosperity. He doesn't. So we kind of bless him, and the picture reminds us of that. When I was over in Africa recently, I was reminded of how our partner church, Charity and Faith, they have spiritual prosperity. They have spiritual abundance. They have spiritual abundance in areas that we don't. So we need a breaking in here. We need to have something break in the spirit realm. I do believe the spirit realm that's trying to keep you from being generous, trying to keep you from being free, that's trying to keep you in bondage. I believe that. And there needs to be a breaking of that. We're going to give a lot of financial tips that's going to help all of us. Those are going to be awesome. We're going to do that. But there needs to be a spiritual breaking. So what we're going to do is, people on the other side of the continent, on the other side of the world, are going to have your picture attached to their hut. It's going to be attached to their wall, and you're going to be prayed for by name visually every day for a breaking for you, a spiritual breakthrough for you. People who have more than us spiritually are going to be praying for us. And I want you to take your Sharpie out right now, put your name on that. If there's anything else you want to put on there, those are going to be mailed over, sent over via plane this week. And you're going to be prayed for every day for the next 6 to 7 weeks. And I believe there's going to be something that could break in you that's never broken before. It's going to be awesome. And let me tell you, I need someone praying for me. I need that. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take up an offering right now. So if you're newer here today, we've totally freaked you out. You may as well just leave right now, probably. Actually, no, if you're new today, even if you don't know anything about us, you sense there's something going on here. And you probably don't trust us enough to give yet. That's cool. But if you're around here, this is how we support things that are happening around here in the globe. So what we're going to do is we're going to be generous with our money if you want to do that. And in the same place you put your money, in the bag, you put you put your picture and any offering in the bag as it comes by right now. So as they do that, we have Christine here. Christine, word. Yeah. Word.
Word.
Word. What's going on? And how about Jay here sitting in the chair like the whole time? Crazy. Can you wave, or is he He actually did sleep last time.
Yeah, he keeps falling asleep.
I think he is
sleeping. Might be out right now.
All right. So tell us where we're going. What's next?
First of all, I'm super excited about these. Make sure you put them in the bag because, I mean, people in South Africa that I've known over there, spiritual giants. You want them praying for you. Second of all, I already got these books.
Pass them quickly. We got a lot of aisles, folks. Got to get all the way to the back in 5 minutes. So put them in.
Get them in
go,
there.
Go, go, go. Don't think about it. Put your stuff in. Pass it on. Money and this in there. People kill. I don't understand. What do I do with these? You put them in the bag, okay? All right, go.
In the bag?
Yes.
Should I put it in the bag?
No, honestly, like the last service. No lie, seriously. This is last service. I said it so clearly over and over again. People still came out going, what do I do with the pictures? What do I do? And here's what I realized. Honestly, listen to me. I'm not the kind of guy who's a demon behind every bush. Honestly. I really think there's like a blinding. A spiritual blinding of somebody's trying to get us from understanding very simple. It's going to lead to spiritual freedom for us. This is a huge deal. Something's going to happen for you. I believe that. All right. Go ahead.
I agree. I think it's a groove that we get into, but it takes somebody shifting the groove for us.
Yes.
So there's a couple ways that you're going to do that as a part of this journey. One is engage in these books. They have lots of extra stuff that we can't communicate just over the weekend. And reading these, engaging in the questions that are in them will take your journey to another level. And then really the foundation of the journey is getting yourself in a small group. We've been talking about that for weeks around here, that you really want to get in a small group. And it's so crucial. I mean, really, that's where life change takes place, is in the small groups.
Lack of, won't be secret. We'll talk about things, maybe not to the detail that I have today. Whatever you feel appropriate sharing. These people might turn out to be lifelong friends with you. They might just be people you know for 6 weeks. They help you process stuff through. But do this. Seriously. It's going to help you.
Yes.
So how do they do it? Show us how.
Right. If you're not in a small group, one of the ways that you can go about it is you can go to crossroads.net/consumed and browse postings that are there and find ways and places where there's still open spots that you could get involved in a group. And another way to get involved is tonight at 7 o'clock, a super fun, really, I'm not lying to you, fun way to get into a group is to come to the Connection event tonight. If you're a host who still has a slot available in your group, come at 7 and we'll give you everything you need, including maybe like a giant sign that you hold up that tells what end of town you're on. It is so much fun. And we'll give you everything you need to find more people. At 7:30, if you don't have a group and you want to find a group, come and we'll help you get connected. Seriously, you will have fun. If you're not in a group, come to that tonight. Another option, if you're a little uncomfortable with going to a stranger's house to get in a small group, is to come here every Wednesday night, and we have on-site groups. The on-site groups are for women, men, there's mixed groups, there's couples groups. So there will be a group available for you every Wednesday night. You can come and get involved in that way. And if you need childcare for that, you need to shoot us an email at childcare@crossroads.net, and we still need hosts for that too. If you're interested in being a host on the Wednesday night on-site groups, give us an email at hosts@crossroads.net. If you're in your 20s, we have yet another option for you. Pursuit, which meets every Thursday night at 7 o'clock, is going to be doing on-site groups as a part of Pursuit, and you can come and be involved in that. There's more information in your program. And even our senior high kids are going to be involved in Consumed, and in your program it says they meet on Monday, but it's actually on Sunday night. So if you're a high schooler and you want to get involved in the journey, you'll want to come to Sunday nights. I think I have given you way overload of information.
And your books. Make sure you bring your books every week. Take notes in those. Do stuff at home. Your personal time with God. Very critical.
Yeah.
And when you leave today, make sure you drop off your Sharpies. We're not consuming those. We're recycling those for every service. Okay. Thank you, Christians. Thanks, Christian. That was it, right?
Yeah. That's it.
All right.
It.
Good. All right. Now let me say this. It's the last thing we're going to do. Let's stand right now, if you don't mind. Let's go ahead and stand. We're going to now pray, and we're going to pray set to music. Let me know. Let me tell you, I know a lot of us right now, you feel really guilty. You feel shame. You feel confusion. Those are the kind of things that the evil one wants you to feel and God doesn't want you to feel. God does not bring shame. God does not bring confusion. You need to know that God cheers for you. that God loves you right where you are. God wants you to go to new places, but He is for you. We don't want something from you this journey. We want something for you. God wants freedom for you. And so what we're going to do is we're going to sing right now and just say, God, just pull me closer. Just pull me closer. God, keep pulling us. Keep pulling us. I sense you pulling already. Keep pulling. Keep pulling. We don't have the strength on our own. Pull, please. Please. You want to be closer. That's what we're asking for. Freedom over the next 6 weeks. Amen. All right, the journey has begun. Drop your stuff off. Tell the kids club workers thank you for staying late. And get out of the stinking parking lot for the next folks. Go. Leave. Don't consume those parking spots. Go. Go.